On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Eicher and Lehman, presented by First Fidelity Bank. Well, we get right to it. It sounds like the season is getting canceled, so we talk about it, but it hasn't happened yet. So we give you the local college football news. OU paused training camp and may be searching for a new opponent in the opener. In the National College Football Roundup, we discuss the MAC pushing the season to the spring, the Big Ten holding off on padded practices, the ACC and SEC schedules, high-profile players opting out, and the latest on college football players making demands. In Football Guys Talking Basketball, we break down the Thunder's latest performance and discuss the NBA Awards finalists. We give you our winners and losers of the weekend and answer your Twitter questions in Keeping It Local. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right. Our man Michael Hostie will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Monday, August 10th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Eicher and Lehman, presented by First Fidelity Bank. First Fidelity Bank is a full-service financial institution based in Oklahoma with tailored solutions for all your personal and business needs. Checking accounts, saving accounts, home loans, and much more. They do it all, whether it's online banking from your computer or mobile banking from your phone. Everything is stress-free with FFB. Making mobile deposits, paying bills online, and moving money to different accounts couldn't be easier. First Fidelity Bank provides free ATMs worldwide, making banking convenient wherever you are. And how about these offers for new customers? If you open a new checking account or savings account, they give you $200. If you open both a new checking and savings account, they give you $500. Free money, people. They also give back to the community. FFB donates a total of more than $500,000 to local charities and educational foundations. Make your life easier and go bank with First Fidelity Bank. Visit FFB.com for more information. Now, we're recording this on Sunday night, and Ted, we had a normal show laid out. The rundown was sent, and well, there's been some material changes since that rundown was sent. And I don't know. I guess we just can't beat around the bush. It sounds like the college football season is getting canceled, which clearly a podcast that really likes to talk about college football, we are not that happy and we are sad. But I think it's important that we acknowledge that and just kind of talk it out, man. You just want to have like a free therapy session right now. I feel like we both need it.
No, we definitely, but well, I mean, yes, I know I need it. And if you're saying you do, then come on, grab the tissues. Let's cry this thing out. I think it is as good a time as any though, Gabe, to officially announce that this will become an NFL and NBA podcast from this point.
Yeah.
Forward.
Oh, we're not going away. Oh, you're not getting rid of us too that easy. First of all, we've got contracts to fulfill with our sponsors, and we will do our damnedest to keep getting them new customers. Okay, but yeah, we'll adjust. I'm not terribly concerned. We've both done radio where you have to talk about everything, so I'm not overly concerned about that. It just sucks, man. I mean, it sucks. I don't know what else to say.
It's frustrating. And, you know, I'll tell you what, there's a couple of things that I just am baffled by. One of them I think is kind of funny because, you know, we've seen for a long time, and people have called this out and maybe been a little bit too harsh, but there's been a lot of media out there, college football specific media, that for a long time time, you know, has given this sense about this upcoming college football season that, well, you know, the virus and it's irresponsible to play. How about these kids? And should we really be doing this? Look at the numbers. And then now that the college football season is on the brink, and a lot of people think that it's going to be announced within the next 72 hours that it's done, I see a lot of those same accounts almost in a panic type situation, like, well, but no, I think we could, it's going to be,
we can save it.
It's going to destroy these college towns. It's going to destroy the financial ability of these athletic departments to fund other sports. Like, how are we going to move on if we don't play? I'm like, guys, we've been doing this for 6 months and all of a sudden now you're hitting the panic button. Come on, man. That's right. Frustrating for me.
Yeah. You can't just change your tone right at the very end when it does look like things are going to get canceled. So let's just throw out the reports that are out there. According to ESPN, there was an emergency meeting of the Power Five commissioners on Sunday. I reached out to a few people. That is definitely true. That meeting took place. Now there's kind of varying degrees of the severity of the meeting from some of the things I've been told, but it does sound like the Big Ten is kind of the one driving a lot of this. Big Ten presidents are supposedly ready to pull the plug on football season, and they wanted to see how the other commissioners and their university presidents felt about it. And the Big Ten presidents are meeting Sunday night, so right now, while we're recording this, where they will likely decide, and I believe there's already some reports that they have decided to cancel football in the fall. So we'll see. I'm sure there'll be a lot to come out in the next couple of days, but the Pac-12 and the Big 12 are scheduled to have calls on Tuesday. But according to our man, Ross Dellinger, I feel like he's part of this podcast at this point. He said the Big 10 is hoping to make a uniform announcement with the other Power Five conferences. Oh, they want to.
That's nice of them this time.
Yeah,
huh?
They want to play ball now. Okay, sure. But yeah, Teddy, it's not looking good, man. It's not looking good. And, you know, I know a lot of people are frustrated, right? You look around the country, you know, we could have handled this entire situation better. There's no doubt. But I don't really want to get into the politics of everything. I don't want to point fingers at everyone and, you know, try to figure out who to blame. Dude, I just feel so bad for the kids. I feel bad for the players, you know, just thinking back of, you know, just how special a college football season was and just how rare it is. And for those kids, especially kids now that they're probably done playing college football. I know that some guys will move on to the league, but some guys are going to look at their situation and go, well, it may be time for me to start real life. And I just hate that those kids didn't get to play that last season. I don't really know what to say. Like if those kids were to ask me, like, what could we have done differently? I don't know what I could tell. It seems like the kids did all the right things, and that's why I feel awful for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of those guys that you're talking about, his situation fits this perfectly, is Trevor Lawrence. You know, Trevor Lawrence is a guy that everyone knows that, you know, he cannot play this season, and his draft position is going to be just fine going to the NFL. He'll be a top five pick. Okay. And if it's worse than that, it's going to be like top seven. He's not a guy that's going to fall. So he wants to win a Heisman Trophy. He wants to win a national championship. He wants to go play a year of college football with his teammates and go out there and put it all on the line. And you've kind of seen him throughout the last couple of days, and specifically today, saying we want to play. And he's laying out all these reasons why it's better for these guys to play. And I agree with him. It's kind of the same stuff I've been saying all along. There's no better place for these guys than at their facilities with the protocols that these schools are going through. not all of the schools are perfect, but it's a heck of a lot better than sending them home and not doing anything until the spring. So it is frustrating. It's tough for, you know, coaches. You know, I know it's different, but it's their job. I understand that, but they've put a ton of work in to try and, you know, appease all the rules and make sure that everything's safe and, you know, host Zoom meetings with their players all off season and do a bunch of things that football coaches typically don't do. Football coaches typically coach football and recruit. This off season for these coaches, they've had to be, you know, I don't know. I guess
infectious disease specialists, politicians, counselors, all of therapists. The above. Yeah. I
everything.
Mean, they've had to do it all, man.
I mean, it's runs the gamut through sports, through social issues, through medical issues. It's like, I mean, part of me thinks that some of those coaches after this last 6 months and what it's been like are probably going to be, I mean, relieved probably isn't the right word, but it's probably going to be nice to finally have a concrete answer. Like, okay, it's done. Where do we go from here? You know, it's just been day after day, the uncertainty, and everyone you talk to, well, what do you think about the season? We going to play football or not? You know, it's just, it's never ending. It's been never ending. And I know it's exhausting for the players and the coaches, but I mean, it's, I agree, incredibly frustrating for some of those guys that, you know, they're going to move on. They're going to go play in the NFL or go to the draft, but wanted this final opportunity. Man, your last season of college football, whenever you know it's your last season, it's by far the most special. You finally step back whenever you're about to kick off that first game of the year and say, wow, this is my last opener here. This is my last season. I better cherish every single moment.
Yeah, and Trevor Lawrence, he brought it up in – kind of a thread of tweets that he put out there kind of saying that people are just as much, if not at more risk, if the players don't play. And he kind of said, well, kids are going to end up going home and probably not following the same guidelines that they would be if they were still playing the season. But once again, I think that if we're being honest about it, this all comes down to long-term liability for schools. It really does. And I know, and I don't want to make it sound like conference commissioners and, you know, university presidents don't have the kids' best interests at heart. Like, I think they do. I think they want what is best for the well-being of the kids. But I don't think unless somehow, and this would never happen, somehow all of these kids sign a liability waiver, a COVID-19 liability waiver, I just don't see how it happens. I don't. And it's a shame it came to this, man. That's the kind of the bottom line for me is a lot of people in the college football world worked extremely hard, especially training staffs, you know, the medical experts, you know, trying to make this as safe as possible for the kids. And it's not like they're the reason that the season's not going to get played.
Right. Well, I mean, and I've seen that. I haven't spent a whole lot of time on Twitter today, but, you know, whenever I was just trying to get up to date with everything that's going on, scanning through the comments section, which I should have ignored, I see a bunch of, you've had all this time and you didn't do anything and now you have to cancel. I'm like, dude, trust me. It's not that they weren't doing anything. They were doing everything they possibly could, but there was just so many roadblocks, so many things to fight against, the court of public opinion, social issues, the fact that the NCAA and the whole framework of the whole model of how they operate is under question right now. You know, liability issues, you pull all of that together and you've got a bigger mess than anyone could ever imagine. It's bigger than any mess you could ever imagine in high school. bigger than pro, bigger than any other sport. It's like the worst of all of those things combined. You've got a contact sport with a huge amount of people that's played in front of massive fan bases, with players that don't get paid in a billion-dollar industry. And it just like, you know, it's the worst possible scenario you could cook up.
Yep. So that's a fun start to the episode. But it's important that we're realistic on here. But now that we've talked about that, we are going to get back to the show we had laid out, because technically, now maybe by the time some of you are listening to this, the season is canceled, but technically it isn't canceled yet. So, Ted, let's get to the local college football news. And that's presented by Will and Wiley Hard Seltzer. Guys, stop acting like you're too manly and just accept it. Hard seltzers are amazing, and there's only one hard seltzer that we drink on this podcast, and that is Will and Wiley Hard Seltzer from Coop Ale Works. I had so many of them this weekend. It's perfect for any occasion. We drink it by the pool, at the lake, and at the tailgate. It's made in Oklahoma, and it's absolutely delicious. Will and Wiley is customized for the Oklahoma lifestyle. Go find it right now in a store near you, and go follow them on social media at Will and Wiley. If you're drinking some because of us, tag us in your social media posts. Let them know. Well, OU practiced Saturday. Then Saturday night, they announced they were pausing training camp practice for a week due to the change in the date of the opener. That's what they put out publicly. They said players are able to go home and will return on Friday, where they will undergo COVID-19 testing and resume preseason practice. Now, Teddy, quick question for you. In your entire football career, do you ever recall spontaneously getting a week off during training camp?
No. I can recall spontaneously getting the rest of my season off at training camp, you know, whenever I got cut. But, you know, that's
you and me both, brother.
Hey, congratulations. You've got the rest of the year to do whatever you want. No. And your first instinct is to say, oh, sweet, a week off. This is awesome. I needed that. But then that quickly is followed up by, this can't be good.
I saw this and knew it was coming and talked to some people, and this is not normal. This is not planned. This is worrisome for me. And and maybe it had to do with the uncertainty of the season, right? I'm sure that everyone, you know, the coaching staff is getting everything, you know, funneled down to them from Joe Castiglione, you know, from President Harris, like this whole thing, right? That they're getting a lot of information, but you just don't give kids off a week during training camp. That just, it doesn't happen. And I know that they had a player finally test positive last week, but I saw this, and you might as well just set fire alarms off in my head when I read that. I was like, this is not good. Not good when, and I know that OU's been probably the most cautious school in all of college football with how they have approached this thing. But when a school that has done such a good job of mitigating the spread of the virus in a locker room, when that school is taking a week off, that's not good. Not good at all. And I know that some people looked at it and, well, oh, this makes sense because the opener's getting pushed back. Listen, no, you don't get a week off during camp. You keep the kids there. You do walkthroughs. You don't give them a week off unless you're given that week off because you think the season's getting canceled in the next couple of days, which I'm guessing that they had started hearing the whispers, and this was one like, hey guys, get away. We don't know what the hell's about to happen. So get you some U time. I don't know how else to look at it other than that, Ted.
Yeah. Which, you know, and I don't know exactly what the week off means. If that means don't come into the facility. If it means don't come into the facility, then that means you're talking about a whole nother group of testing and going through all of that stuff all over again if they're wanting to do it the same way they did the first time. So whenever they tell everyone to go have a week, then yeah, that means the writing's kind of on the wall. You know, that's frustrating. And, you know, I feel for the players, I feel for everyone involved, but just all of the uncertainty makes it horrible to be sitting there at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and not know if you're having an OTA the next day or if you're having a full padded practice the next day. And that's players and coaches. That's not just players. That's like everyone involved has no idea. And you knew it was something strange whenever they weren't practicing. Yeah, they didn't have a date necessarily for the home opener as, you know, the Big 12 moved back the start of conference play, but everyone else in the conference was in practice. So whenever that was going on and Oklahoma wasn't practicing, I was like, man, there's a reason. They wouldn't have moved their date up to week zero and started training camp when they started it and then all of a sudden said, you know what? Practice really isn't all that important right now. Let's go ahead and hold off. That would not have been the case. So that tells you that there was some pretty serious stuff leaning towards maybe we're not going to have this thing after all.
Yeah. So once again, it hasn't been canceled yet. So we will give you the latest update on the opener. And so Missouri State is in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. They announced they won't play conference games in the fall. They're going to play an 8-game spring schedule, hoping that the FCS playoffs will happen then, right? FCS getting pushed to the spring. But in what is just a hilarious development to me, they said non-conference games this fall are still up to each institution, meaning Missouri State can still technically play Oklahoma in a football game, even though their conference play got pushed to the spring. That would be absolutely hilarious, but there are 600,000 reasons why Missouri State would play that football game. And I think if the season happens, which looking dicey, real, real dicey, Missouri State has every intention of coming to Norman to get their ass kicked, collect their check, and go home.
I feel like even if we say no, we're playing someone else, they would still show up, like bust down here and be standing outside the stadium in case. Like, it's, hey, like, we're here just in case something happens.
We all know that couple that breaks up all the time, and one's like, you know what, I'm breaking up with you, and the other one's like, no, you're not. Like, it's not happening. Like, we're not breaking up. I feel like OU would be dumping Missouri State, and they'd be like, no, we're not breaking up. No, we're in this for the long haul.
Are you telling me that Joe Castiglione's getting text messages at like 1 a.m.? You still up?
Still up? What you doing? Want to hang out? I couldn't believe this. And
I thought it was hilarious to hear. I mean, the athletic director actually came out and was like, hey, we're still open to playing Oklahoma.
Which is awesome.
How awesome would that look on our resume for the college football playoff? And in their non-conference, they play Missouri State, who was 0-1 on the year with a 70-point loss to Oklahoma. How's that help your strength of schedule?
I don't even know. I assume you just throw the metrics out the window at that point. I assume. I don't know, but I just thought it was – I did think it was kind of awesome that Missouri State was still like, oh, yeah, no, we want to play that game. It's like, guys, your season essentially just got canceled, and they're like acting like nothing happened. I kind of loved it.
I'll tell you that. So the one thing that's interesting about it, okay, assume that the season happens and assume that in some crazy world we still decide to play Missouri State and they're going to have a one – game season. Don't you show up if you're Bobby Petrino with like 80 trick plays? Every single play that you run is a one-off trick play that you would never run in a million years. You don't ever punt it. You onside kick it every time. You just – it's a one-game season. That means nothing. Like, let's go. I mean, we don't have to put together an offense to get ready for the rest of the season. Everything is one-off.
I understand. Yeah, it would be – I mean, their game plan, I assume, would be absolutely insane. It would be so much fun to watch. But I'm not going to lie. When you were like, if you're Bobby Petrino and you show up, I thought you were going to say something about like hot chicks on the back of a motorcycle. I fully anticipated you making that joke right there. And I was like, oh, here it comes. But yeah, no, that would certainly be an interesting football game. And yeah, sign me up just for the storyline that it would be the only game of the fall for Missouri State. You talk about leaving everything on the field.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have much to leave out there, but yeah, they'd leave everything on the field for sure. That would be the only thing that could ever make that game interesting.
Yeah, that would add some flavor to it for sure. All right, Ted, the Amway coaches poll, the preseason coaches poll is out, and the Oklahoma Sooners are number 6, which seems about right. They're behind Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. So I think OU probably getting the proper amount of respect, and it's kind of fun to have something to argue about when it comes to these rankings. Some other Big 12 teams in the top 25 of the preseason coaches poll: Texas comes in at number 14, Oklahoma State comes in at number 16, and Iowa State comes in at number 25. So you got 4 Big 12 teams. So 4 of the 10, not too shabby, but of course, the Sooners just outside of the top 5. And I mean, that's the expectation, right? And I think that shows Lincoln Riley a lot of respect. It shows Spencer Rattler a lot of respect. And I think it shows Alex Grinch a lot of respect, because I think a lot of people are anticipating a big jump from the Sooners defensively. But that's where they're at in college football right now. OU is a top 5, top 6 program. And those are the names right there. Clemson, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, LSU, Oklahoma. That is the elite tier in college football. And I really can't get mad at them being behind any of those teams. That seems just right.
Yeah, I mean, I would have the order a little bit different. And I probably wouldn't have LSU there, but I can't fault them for doing that. I'll tell you what I think is most interesting about it. Like, those, you're right, those are the teams. That's the top shelf of college football. But here's what I think is fascinating about it. Alabama, new quarterback. Georgia, new quarterback. Oklahoma, new quarterback. LSU, new quarterback. Oregon, who's right behind us, new quarterback. I mean, that says a lot. Typically, if you're going to be a top 10 team, it's because you have a dynamite quarterback returning that just came off of a really, really good year. That's why you're picked up that high. But, I mean, that's 5 teams right there in the top, like, 7 or 8 that are all going to have a new quarterback. And that's pretty telling about how much better those schools are from the rest.
Yeah, and it all comes down to recruiting and just stockpiling talent, right? Even when teams like Clemson and Ohio State and Bama lose big-time players that go in the first round of the draft, they just reload. And that's kind of where Oklahoma, I believe they're really building towards that right now. That's kind of like what you guys were like when you were playing, you know, where, you know, big-time guys would leave and then another guy would just step in with the way that OU was recruiting back then. I think that they're getting back to that with Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch and getting the proper amount of respect in the top 25 poll.
The one advantage that Oklahoma, I feel like, has always had over kind of the rest of college football is our ability to replace quarterbacks year after year after year. I mean, there haven't been too many misses over the last 20 years at quarterback. You can't really say the same. Like LSU, I mean, I've hardly had a good quarterback. Oregon, I mean, yeah, they had a Heisman Trophy winner a couple years ago in Mariota, but God, they haven't had – they've been more hit and miss than anyone. Georgia, Alabama even. But you look at this list now with Ohio State, Clemson, who's got an unbelievable talent backing up Trevor Lawrence, Alabama with the young kid out of California, Georgia gets transfers in. Everyone all of a sudden is way better at recruiting the quarterback position, I think, than they've ever been.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch. I hope we get to watch it. Please, I hope
we'll get
crazy.
To watch it at some point. We just don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah, no, well, that's a good point. And then one last piece of local college football news. Scott Wright from the Oklahoman wrote an article about Tylan Wallace. Pretty cool. Sounds like the Oklahoma State Cowboys are being pretty cautious still with their star wide receiver early in training camp. They have him in a non-contact jersey like the quarterbacks, which is green at Oklahoma State. How about that? I guess you can't go red when you're, you know, you got some guys wearing orange, some guys wearing black, so they go green for their non-contact.
Blue usually the standard, though?
Yeah, but green. Maybe it just pops with the orange. I mean, orange and green go better than blue and –
really?
I don't know. I don't know. No, I'm just trying to – I'm trying to make sense of it. I have no idea why they wear green jerseys. I don't know.
I think green goes with anything but yellow.
Well, green and gold look cool together, and green and black look cool. Green goes with a lot. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that was wrong.
We're idiots. But they want Tylan Wallace's confidence and his knee to continue to grow, so kind of easing him back into some things. But there was a pretty funny story about his rehab, right? Because he was rehabbing, and then Oklahoma State's campus shut down. He had to go home, so he had to get pretty creative at home with his knee rehab. And he said at one point he was doing squats with 40-pound boxes of cat litter, which I thought was hilarious. But it did lead me to a question. Is Tylan Wallace a cat guy? Could you trust a cat guy? I mean, I understand maybe he just bought the cat litter to lift, but does he have cats? Because I may have some questions. NFL teams aren't going to like that. You know that, Teddy.
You do not buy cat litter to lift. There's a bunch of things that weigh 40 pounds. You don't have to go buy the cat litter to weigh 40 pounds. My thing is, like, does he have a tiger? I mean, a 40-pound box of cat litter, and you said multiple boxes. Like, either this dude's like an old cat lady with 40 stray cats in his house, or – dude's got like a big cat hanging around or something.
Are you saying he's going like full Joe Exotic, like Carol Baskin style? He's got –
this is Tylan Exotic.
He's got some exotic. Oh, God.
Tylan Exotic. Big cat guy.
I'm glad that he's back and, you know, in that facility getting to use all of that equipment, because as a guy that went through – you know, an ACL surgery and went through the entire rehab, I can't imagine doing that without all that fancy equipment that you have in a training room at your disposal. But it was kind of funny to hear him talk about just, hey, he was working out in his living room. He was finding like trails around the neighborhood to run on. I was like, man, this dude had to get really creative.
I'll tell you what, there's no one in the country more pissed right now than Mike Gundy. I mean, his team goes from –
they were going to be good –
fantastic to just another Big 12 team really quickly.
Yeah. I can't – if it gets pushed to the spring, right, I can't imagine. Chuba. Yeah, Chuba Hubbard's gone. Tylan Wallace, I would assume he's gone, but you don't really know, right? But if it gets pushed to the spring, the NFL has to change – the timeline, right? They have to play ball with them. They have to – I say that, but it's the NFL. They don't do anything they don't want to do.
I mean, they said early on that they're not changing the date of the draft. I mean, I think that's a ploy of saying we want college football to play in the fall with us. You know, that's what we want. So let's not act like we're going to accommodate them to help them play in the spring. But they want to see those guys play. They don't want to have a blind draft without seeing the best
players. They want to get as much film as they can on guys. If they're about to invest millions of dollars in some of these guys. They don't want them having that long of a break from playing actual football. I mean, the NFL doesn't want that. I know that
NFL wants college football to play at their best capacity. That's how they evaluate their incoming talent.
Yeah, and it's the best farm system ever. They don't have to pay them at all. It's awesome for the NFL.
Tylan Wallace, though, I mean, it is interesting because he's coming off of a major injury. So if you're an NFL team, obviously you know the talent's there, but you want to see if the surgery has taken properly, if he's bounced back, if he's the player that he was before. But if you're Tylan Wallace, man, it's like you just can't play. I mean, if you don't play, your draft position is going to fall. There is no doubt about that. It's going to fall. You know, they're going to be taking you on, you know, how good that knee is and checking out the physical, but you're going to fall as a pick. But if you go out there and play and re-injure it, and knees, sometimes they re-injure easily. We just saw one with Caleb Kelly, right? The guys put, I mean, it's a solid year of rehab in and getting it right, has even played a little bit on it, played late in the season last year. And you feel like that thing is good and goes out there and pops it right away. So that happens. You can't risk that, because if you go do that, you're not going to get drafted. So you got to swallow the lower draft rating, and you just can't risk it. Unfortunately, that's how it is.
Yeah, and work for that second contract, right? How many times do we hear that about NFL guys? I'm moving on to the National College Football Roundup. That is brought to you by Insurica. Do you own a business? If you do, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage options and pricing in order to design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. Insurica's clients become best-in-class businesses by working with Insurica's teams of advisors to manage risk. Purchasing insurance is only one way to protect your business. Best-in-class businesses win by avoiding a loss in the first place. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. I'm an Insurica client, and you should be too. If your business wants to become best-in-class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com. Well, the MAC canceled their fall season and kind of got this entire ball rolling. They pushed to the spring, so there will not be any Tuesday or Wednesday night MACtion this fall, which is absolutely heartbreaking. They became the first FBS conference to postpone all of their fall sports over coronavirus concerns. The vote of the school presidents was unanimous, and they are still planning on playing in the spring. It sounds like Northern Illinois' president may have played a large role in that. She is a former research scientist, but this really came down to money, in my opinion. And when Power Five schools went conference only, I think it killed the MAC. It did. You see that they had 11 games, Ted, 11 against the Big Ten that was already costing them something like $10.5 million. So they were just put in a really, really bad position. They weren't going to have the resources probably to test the amount you would want to test if you were going to play the season. And Pete Thamel put a tweet out there that made me so sad. Man, he said that Toledo head coach Jason Candle was leaving the facility Saturday. Like, they had already called off the season, the MAC had, and there was just like 20 players out on the field just going through drills, already knowing that their season was canceled. And I just, it just broke my heart, because I was like, they just didn't know what to do, probably. They probably were like, well, this is what we do. And that's something.
You got nervous energy. You just got to go do something, man.
And, and a lot of people may not realize, it's like college football players, you have every second of every day essentially scheduled for you. Like, there is this rigorous structure in place for you. And now these guys are probably like, well, what the hell do we do now?
Look, coach, we still want to play. I mean,
help. Someone help us.
I mean, that's frustrating. That's sad and shocking. Whenever scientists and medical experts get around the game, they ruin it, cancel it. Who couldn't see this coming?
Yeah, stupid scientists.
Yeah, we don't need your science, okay? We already know it's dangerous. You know, we've seen people get hurt. We don't need medical experts. No, I mean, it's frustrating. And yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. We talked about this earlier in the, you know, in previous shows, that this non-conference money is what makes some of these other schools' athletic budgets happen. You know, that's how they get around the season. And, you know, whenever schools said we're not playing non-conference games, it wasn't about staying local or keeping it in your conference. It was about we're not going to be able to make money on these games. We're going to be paying big money for them to come in and play, not going to have any fans in the stands. This is a loser. We need to dump this game immediately. So, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. I understand it for the MAC. I understand it for all of the other conferences that have canceled. A lot of it is because of the testing protocols and everything. I, you know, it's frustrating all the way around.
Dude, that's going to suck so bad. Like, what are we going to do on Tuesday nights in the fall? Like a Wednesday night in the fall? Like, you know that like feeling when you're randomly flipping through the channels and you just stumble upon one of those Maction games?
Yeah.
You just like the Ohio Bobcats are on, and you're like, oh, hell yeah, football on a Tuesday. Let's go. And you sit and you watch the entire 35 game. 35
with like 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. It's like, okay, let's see what happens here.
I'm going to miss that. But hopefully Maction will be back in all of its glory in the spring.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, let's assume that college football is done for the fall and they go to the spring. And the NFL still happens in the fall. Is the NFL going to steal every single window? Are they going to play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday?
Oh, yeah. Of course they are. They're definitely going to play Saturday. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense. The players won't like it. You know that. Like, you know they won't like it. But I wouldn't even be – how about this? Like, NFC teams play Sundays. AFC teams play Saturdays, or just something. Not, and I obviously know that, you know, teams play
crossover
team. Yeah. They have the crossover
home,
with the divisions.
Team is the day you play on, maybe.
Yeah. Something like that. Why not?
They're going to be like, at first it's going to be like, dang it, we're going to be the only show in town. And then it's like, hang on a second. We're going to be the only show in town.
And everyone's going to be at home.
Right. Everyone's going to be at home. Nothing else happening. Well, I mean, I can't say nothing else happening because every other sport in the world is going to be having their playoffs and stuff going on at the same time. So it's going to be
wild. It doesn't matter. It's the NFL.
Oh, I agree.
It's king.
I agree.
But, yeah, all right. The Big Ten, they announced that they will not progress to padded practices yet. They're going to keep going helmets only. They're reassessing things before it moves forward. Sounds like their presidents are going to be responsible for canceling the season, but I didn't really understand this. I understand that there's this notion that padded practices, there's more contact than a helmets only practice. That's not true. We went through it, Teddy, the helmets only practice where you get the most bruises. It's the exact same thing. You're just beating the hell out of each other only in helmets. It's miserable. It's miserable.
It's like, can someone please allow us to put the shoulder pads on? But the problem is, like, whenever you have helmets only, it's just as physical I mean, it's not as physical, but it hurts a hell of a lot more because everyone's
going
hard.
You get that upper shoulder bruise. Like, it,
face
there's
mask
no doubt
on the top of the shoulder is the worst.
Oh, every time, every year.
So it's like, can we please have some protection here? But then if you put the shoulder pads on, then it's like a whole nother level. Like, there's never is a comfortable level to practice football. It's just, it doesn't happen. But what you're saying is, that's why I kind of made this joke about the, when you get scientists and medical experts involved, because a medical expert would say, oh, well, you know, clearly there would be less transmission in a helmets only practice. That's not the case. It's probably worse.
These nerds don't know anything. They haven't been through it.
If you haven't been there and seen what it's actually like, I mean, it seems reasonable. Oh, there's less contact. There's less, physical drills and guys. That's not the case at all.
It's the exact same practice structure. It's the same script. Maybe you don't do inside run, but this just in, you do it. They just work it in during the team periods, and they spread it out.
Well, I mean, every practice I've ever been to, they still do inside drill.
Yeah,
now, you don't do combos and stuff in individual, but I mean, you're right. It's literally the exact same schedule. There is no, this is the padded practice schedule and this is the unpadded practice schedule.
See, I saw it and I was like, wait, they know it's the same shit, right? Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, anyone that thinks that this is, like, it's different, just go do a practice. You'll watch it when they're in helmets only in those first two practices. You got, God, those guys are beating the shit out of each other.
It's worse. You probably get guys hurt more. I mean, I don't know how the numbers mount up, but it's brutal, especially like for NFL mini camp and OTAs, because you got 90 guys there. There's 53 spots. And every single guy out there is playing like it's the Super Bowl, trying to make the team in like walkthrough sessions. It's brutal, man. It's brutal.
And you have the walkthroughs that are at a uncomfortably quick pace as well before you have the helmets only practice in college. Like, it's just ridiculous. That was so stupid when I read it. The ACC schedule is out. They're going to begin Thursday, September 10th. If there's a season, they are staying with the 10 plus one format. So that's 10 conference games and then one non-conference game that has to be played in the ACC team's home state. In the conference schedule, they're going 5 home and 5 away for everyone. And they will play the ACC championship game on December 12th or 19th. And as I was looking through the schedule, Clemson already had to go to Notre Dame, so that wasn't that big of a deal. But then I saw Florida State's schedule, and I just was like, wait, that can't be right. And I checked it, and then I checked it again, and I was like, oh my gosh, they must really hate Florida State. So Florida State, by far the biggest loser in the ACC schedule announcement. Clemson, Notre Dame, Pitt, and Virginia, they all have a bye week before they play Florida State. I was like, that can't be right. That's got to be a misprint. And I looked at it. I was like, no. Nope. And I know that they built it in with bye weeks and off weeks to try to maximize flexibility, right? We talked about that with the Big Ten schedule last episode. But, yeah, I just looked at it and I'm like, man, they must really hate Florida State.
You know, unfortunately, that's kind of how it goes whenever you're going to redo it. Some people are going to get, I mean, rarely is it going to be a wash. You're either going to have a better schedule or a worse schedule, and I feel for those that have the worst schedule. But man, I like what the ACC did. I mean, that to me was the biggest winner so far this off season in the mad scramble to play a season, bringing Notre Dame in and allowing them to play for a conference championship and bringing in their revenue from their TV deal and being able to split all of that up between all of those schools. It's good to see people working together and trying to figure out a way to get it all done. So unfortunately,
why would people work together to make things work? What What are you talking about, Teddy? Like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Well,
some people actually wanted to play football this fall, unlike Big Ten's commissioner, Kevin Warren, who wanted to push it to the spring. I don't know how those meetings go, but if you're in one of the power meetings and your conference commissioner says, yeah, you know, I really think we should push this thing off to the spring, I would say, yeah, I'd like to present a vote quickly. All in favor of firing the commissioner, yay or nay. I mean, come on, you don't want your commissioner doing that, do you? Isn't he supposed to do everything in his power to get it done in the fall?
Yeah, I think that's his job, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's like, whoa,
I guess his job,
buddy,
is technically to represent the interests of all of the university presidents. Like, that's his job, yeah, technically. Well, so maybe he's just
their
relaying.
Interest is to play in the fall. I'll just tell you that right now. You know, the revenue in the spring, I guess I really don't know how it's all going to shake out, and they got time on that. But, you know, they had 6 months for this thing, and it all just evaporated before anything happened. So if we play in the spring, we'll see what it ends up looking like.
There's going to be some Big Ten schools going, hey, Pac-12, you got any more of them loans you were talking about? Huh? You got any of those left? The SEC announced the two cross-divisional games for each team that they added to get to the 10-game conference schedule format. And some got solid opponents and others did not. And I don't think any of us are surprised. Georgia got Mississippi State and Arkansas, and not too bad, but they get Arkansas, so you got to feel really good about that. Florida got Arkansas and A&M. Got to feel good about the Arkansas, but A&M supposed to be a good football team this year. Tennessee got A&M and Auburn. Not exactly what you want if you're Jeremy Pruitt. But Bama, of course, you're like, well, maybe they'll give us some good Bama games. Nope. They got Kentucky and Missouri. Now, Kentucky, not that bad. I don't want to make it sound like Stoops hadn't done a good job there in Lexington, but with what they could have gotten, getting Kentucky and Missouri has to feel like a big win. Of course they got Kentucky and Missouri. LSU gets Missouri and Vandy. And then, which this kind of made me laugh, just because I feel like a lot of us like just hating on Texas A&M. A&M got Florida and Tennessee in the East. And I was like, ooh, man, that's a real shame for the Aggies, Ted. I'm sure when you saw that, you were like, oh, poor A&M.
Well, so they just added to the other schedule. So don't they have Georgia and Florida again this year? So they come off of like the worst schedule in history of the sport. And it's like, okay, this is like our year. We finally have a window.
Last year they played four teams that were ranked number one in the country or something absurd. And they were like, you know what? We're getting an easier schedule this year. Kellen Mond's in his senior year. This is the year, baby. We're going to win the SEC. And all of a sudden they get Florida and Tennessee added.
Yeah, not what you want. But, hey, you know, you just got to go out there and play them and see what happens. And I don't know. So that's another question. Let's say the fall doesn't happen and we push this to a spring season. Are they going to, you think they're going to carry these schedules forward, or is it going to blow up and try and reschedule non-conference, or how do you think that happens?
I don't think there's any telling right now. I think it will be driven a lot by clearly what happens with the virus here in the next couple months. But then, yeah, I think they would just wipe it clean, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe decide whether or not.
Go back to your conference schedule that you originally had and then try and redo non-conference games.
Why not just play the schedule you had scheduled before to try to make everything work? And I don't know if there's a good answer. I really don't.
I'm with you on that. The only thing is, like, we would think that if you move it to the spring, we're in a better position, but who knows? Then, you know, it may still be don't want to play non-conference games. But one more thing on the schedules before we move on. So the ACC and the SEC, especially the SEC and the way theirs went down. And I think it was Friday afternoon, is whenever they started releasing like what the crossover games were going to be, like who was going to get who. And it all kind of came out on, I think, on SEC, on the ESPN.
Yeah, SEC Network stuff.
Yeah, SEC Network. And it was like, it was fast and furious, and it was really awesome. I wonder if they've learned anything on these schedule releases like the NFL does it. You know, like if
you've been championing this for a long time that you want kind of a big schedule release event for college football.
I mean, I think it's awesome. I think it's a lot of fun. Now, unfortunately, I don't know. Like, it's just kind of how things are in college football.
Unfortunately, they schedule it 72 years in advance.
Which I got to tell you, man, I don't know that necessarily that is going to be one of the things, but I feel like there's going to be some big changes in college football whenever we finally emerge from this and play a football season. So, I mean, it was cool to watch the SEC do it, and I think they're missing out on really big opportunities for ratings and drawing some off-season attention to the sport.
Yeah, I bet you something like that happens, right? They will have had to learn something going through this entire thing, right? Whether it's a scheduling announcement, or maybe you don't have to schedule so far in advance because people are willing to work together sometimes and get some deals done. I don't know. I'm with you, though. I think that college football, something's got to change. I think college athletics in its entirety is going to change. I think everyone realized that maybe they were spending a little too much of that money they were bringing in. So I'm sure a lot's going to change. Now, there are some high-profile players that have opted out of the 2020 season. Micah Parsons officially opted out from Penn State. Said he felt comfortable with what Penn State was doing from a protocol standpoint, but just said it wasn't worth the risk to his young son. So arguably the best defensive player in college football won't be playing. Miami defensive end Gregory Rousseau has also opted out. He's considered the top defensive end in college football. He led the ACC in sacks last year with 15 and a half. He is a lot of fun to watch. He will not be playing this year. Purdue wide receiver Rondale Moore opted out. I mean, he goes to Purdue. What did you guys expect? Like, of course he's going to take advantage of this, but he was electric as a true freshman with the Boilermakers. So good, in fact, that he became the first true freshman consensus All-American in Big Ten history, which is hard to believe, but maybe a little surprising that he opted out so early, because he missed a ton of time last year with an injury. But some good news, if college football is played somehow, and once again, we started the show the way we started it for a reason, but Trevor Lawrence did say he's 100% committed to playing in 2020, but, and this is now a big but, he did say he would have to reevaluate if games get canceled or if the season gets pushed to the spring. And he has been firing off tweets trying to find a way to play this fall. But that's not looking good. But, yeah, once again, high-profile players opting out. Can't blame them with the uncertainty. They may not even had to do that. They could have saved their graphics department some of their precious time, because the season may get, you know, all these guys may get opted out whether they want to or not.
Well, the graphics department hopefully enjoyed putting those graphics up, because maybe the last graphics to ever make it out of those departments. I mean, you mentioned it with the money situation. There's budget cuts. There's going to be some big changes to not just college football, to all college sports, man. It's going to be really tough. But Trevor Lawrence, yeah, man, I feel for him, because, you know, unfinished business, whatever you want to call it. He was really gunning for this season to come back and go win a Heisman, go win a championship, and do it with his teammates. So I feel bad for him, but I feel bad for anyone. I mean, not just him. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that have put in tons of work, had tough off seasons trying to figure out how to do this thing alone throughout a quarantine situation. So to go through all of that only to have it pushed off possibly is is pretty disappointing. But, you know, all of a sudden the players are firing off those tweets about how bad they want to play. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this to the players, but that should have been happening all along instead of talking about let's use this opportunity to try and get 50% revenue. You should have been saying, because a lot of times no one was asking what the players felt, right? No one was asking, well, what do the players say? And if they did, you know, it would be like, you know, one player said that he doesn't want to play. Well, what did the other 99 on the team say? So I think whenever they're vocal, like they are right now, is great. But my fear is that it's too little too late.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. Do you think that if a guy like Trevor Lawrence came out and said, I will sign a liability waiver releasing Clemson for any long-term effects if I get the coronavirus this season? And I know this would never happen, right? I don't think it's possible. I don't think college – I think colleges would view it almost as unethical, right, to make kids sign something like that. But if enough players came out and said something like that, like, hey, we will sign a liability waiver, a COVID-19 liability waiver, I wonder if something like that, if that would have gained some momentum, you know, months ago, if the season would have been able to be saved. Because – I do think that that is the big roadblock, the long-term liability angle of this for universities. I do think now, of course, they want what's best for the well-being and the health of the kids. But Teddy, you know as well as I do how involved lawyers have been in these discussions, and these school presidents, these lawyers, these are risk-averse people. And the only way they would feel good about the risk is if players said, we're not going to sue you down the line if we contract the virus while we're playing. And I just don't think that's realistic. But part of me thinks that's the only way football would have been played in the fall. And it wasn't going to happen, man. It just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, in that instance, if players opted in to sign a liability waiver to play, I think it would have meant something in the court of public opinion. Hey, these kids really want to play.
Like, wow, look at how serious these kids are about this. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah.
Legally,
no, that's a good point.
I don't think it would have changed anything, because a lot of insurance people will tell you that liability waivers mean nothing. Like, you know, it wouldn't be difficult at all for a college kid to sign a liability waiver, play football, get the virus, and let's say that there was some type of complications and long-term effects that came with it. It wouldn't be hard for the college football player to say, well, I mean, I was forced to sign that. I felt like if I didn't sign the liability waiver like everyone else did, that, you know, I'd lose my position. I mean, I don't think that a liability waiver would ever hold up in this situation. And I don't even know that the insurance, like, that's something that it's another piece of the pie that we don't talk about, is college football programs are insured. And, you know, the insurance companies have a seat at the table too, as far as what you need to do to stay up to date and make sure that these insurance guidelines are being followed. And if they're not, sorry, but you're on your own whenever it comes to that. So yeah, I mean, I think it would have helped definitely in the court of public opinion if we saw a bunch of players gather instead of be united in demanding 50% of revenue and all of these other things. If they would have been united in the fact that we want to play and we'll sign a waiver, then that would have really changed things as far as the athletic directors, conference commissioners, and even just college football fans in general.
Yeah, and you saw Ohio State's players put a letter out there essentially distancing themselves from some of the bullet points that the Big Ten United group put out, right? The Ohio State players, they said that they were more than pleased with how Ohio State had handled their safety, and that they didn't feel exploited, and that they wanted to play in the fall. And then on the other side of things, you saw players in the American, right? They come out asking for what they called hazard pay. And they also asked for 20% of league revenues because they were playing during a pandemic. And I understand the players feeling that way, but best of luck with that. I just don't understand. I don't understand. And now at the point that this has gotten to, it just seems silly for all sides, right, to be arguing about it. But then you heard the Pac-12 players, they met with Larry Scott, and in a shocking development, I guess it didn't go very well, Teddy. I guess the players, they wanted daily testing. They wanted a conference testing policy that would be implemented there in the Pac-12. And Larry Scott basically continued to say that they're going to take the advice of the medical experts that is working with them in the league office. And allegedly, Larry Scott said, if the players lawyer up, then they will be speaking to the Pac-12's lawyers and not to him any longer. Yeah, that's how it works.
If there's lawyers present, all of a sudden I have to step back and let counsel step in. Hey, quick thought. What do you think would happen if we said to our sponsors, hey, by the way, I forgot to tell you, there's a 20% hazard pay increase because we're doing the podcast during a pandemic?
I have a feeling I want to make it clear, our sponsors, all very, very great. I mean, they are great, great businesses. But I have a feeling they would tell us to
get stuffed.
That's the term you use. Get stuffed, right? Now they would say, what the hell? No, that's not the deal. That's not what we signed up for. And I would say, oh, yeah, you're right. My bad.
I mean, here's the point, though. I know the football players, and trust me, I've been there before. Football players feel very special, okay? I hate to tell these guys, but everyone in the country right now is working in a pandemic. Everybody is. And just because you're playing football doesn't mean you're more likely to get it. You're probably less likely to get it than a grocery store clerk or a janitor or any other million occupations that you can think of. Everyone's working without hazard pay, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. And now it's looked like, hey, this is good. Doesn't look like they're going to have to worry about it. Right? No. Oh, that was a bad joke. I'm so damn sad that college football is going to get canceled.
Oh. You are now hazardless, guys. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, the hazards, yeah. Significantly less hazards now. All right, let's move on to the segments, Ted. And since it is Monday, you're going to get some football guys talking basketball. Yes, some FGTB. And that is brought to you by Tim Hughes Custom Homes. Are you looking to build your dream home? If so, Tim Hughes is the man you're looking for. Tim Hughes Custom Homes is a one-stop shop for all your home building needs. He can find you a lot. He can find you an architect. He'll find you financing. And of course, he can build your dream home exactly the way you want it. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, Tim found my wife and me a lot. He found us an architect and he built our new home. It is awesome, by the way. Teddy, I know you've seen some pictures.
Oh, man.
Tim,
I love it.
And his team were so easy to work with. I never even had to threaten him with physical violence. Still haven't yet. He's been great. And I think I'm sure we're still paying him. I don't know, which is, it's pretty rare. But he's also built several office buildings. So if your business is looking to build a custom office, Tim Hughes is your man. You can see Tim's custom builds throughout Gallardia, Nichols Hills, Oak Tree, Stone Mill, and Rose Creek. It is a great time to build the house of your dreams. For more information and to see Tim's spectacular work, visit his Instagram page at Tim Hughes Custom Homes or visit timhughescustomhomes.com. You can maybe get your home loan from FFB and then use Tim. How about that? All right, Ted, the Thunder smacked the Wizards, who are a terrible basketball team. They're just not good. But it was a nice bounce back opponent and victory after the disappointing performance in the last three quarters against the Memphis Grizzlies. Honestly, the Wizards, at this point, they are just a really good G League team. And the Thunder beat their ass the way that they were supposed to, even without Steven Adams and Andre Robertson and Nerlens Noel. Chris Paul was great. I know that, what, he only had about 10 points, but he's one of those guys. He can dominate a game just by the way he controls the tempo and just how he gets the other guys to play, always gets them in the right spots. He's just, I think he's one of the more underappreciated basketball players that we've seen over the last decade. I don't think people appreciate his basketball IQ, but it was good to see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander get to the rim a little more, had a solid game after a tough shooting performance against Memphis. But the star of the game, Darius Bazley, all of a sudden, is he now the best three-point shooter in the NBA? Teddy, what the hell was that?
I don't know. He's fantastic. And I'll tell you, it's what I really love about this team is how athletic they are and how well they defend at every single position. They really don't have a defensive liability out there. You know, teams in the past with the Thunder, you always felt like there was a massive liability. We had so many one-way players. Either we had guys that were total offensive guys and liability defensively, or total defensive guys and a liability on the offensive end. But this is a big group of two-way players, and to be able to see Bazley dropping threes like that and just the effort and the toughness that they play with on defense, it's a lot of fun, man. And I'll tell you, I've always been a Chris Paul hater.
Oh, yeah, we all have. Anybody that's a Thunder fan that says they weren't a Chris Paul hater, probably a liar. But then again, he was in Oklahoma City with the Hornets, and I know a lot of people loved him just from his time in Oklahoma City with the Hornets. So maybe there's more Chris Paul fans that are Thunder fans than I realize. But, yeah, no, he was a whiner. He was injury prone, right? He was a bad teammate. You know, we all said those things. It's okay. We can admit it.
But here's the thing. Chris Paul has looked pissed off and unhappy and grumpy in the NBA, honestly, since that whole trade thing with New Orleans all got nixed to the Lakers, right? And it just seems like he's been angry the entire time, never looks happy, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's that he sees the end is near or what, but he looks different on this team. He looks happy. He looks engaged. He looks like he's leading the right way. And I have to say that I actually enjoy watching Chris Paul play. And this is coming from when I say hater, hated the guy. Like, he was on my short list of guys that I dislike the most in the NBA.
Him and Phillip Rivers.
Him and Phillip Rivers and Jordan Spieth. That's the short list right there. But, I mean, he's growing on me. I still feel like I'm a sellout whenever I cheer for him. But, you know.
That's just how it works. He's wearing the Thunder jersey. You don't have a choice.
It's just how it works. I feel like his whole demeanor has changed since he got on this team. And maybe it's because he's not competing with other stars. And is it his team or is it someone else's team? He can just settle in, be the leader, the veteran voice on the team. And he's got a bunch of young guys that buy into what he says. It's a really fun team to watch right now.
Yeah. And I love what I'm seeing from Lu Dort. He's just him contributing offensively. It's just like almost a bonus with the way that he is, you know, I mean, with how efficient he is gritty, defensively. Dude. I mean, he's running into some dudes and they do not look like they enjoy it. But yeah, seeing Bazley go for a career high 23, 5 of 8 from three, you can see his offensive confidence growing. I mean, the step back, I did not know he had that in the toolbox. So that is,
he may not, you just break it out against the Wizards.
he's like,
check things out.
Might as well try it. And then the Thunder shot the three well. hit 18 of them. So that's big for them. That's huge. If they shoot the three like that, no one's going to want to play this team. Nobody.
You're the smart guy of the pair here. My math is okay. Yours is great, but three is better than two. It's worth more on the scoreboard.
Carry the one. So. Yep. Still checks out.
That's the one thing that, and this goes back a long time with the Thunder. The Thunder have never been a good team three-point shooting squad. And you can go back as long as you want. Whenever they hit threes, and this isn't just an Oklahoma City Thunder thing, but when they hit threes in bunches, they are almost impossible to beat. So if that continues, that'll be the best thing ever.
Yeah, speaking of impossible to beat, the Thunder get the Suns at 1:30 on Monday. Of course, 1:30 tip time. That's normal. But the Suns are actually the only team still undefeated in the bubble. The Phoenix Suns are 5-0 in Orlando, and Devin Booker is on an absolute tear. I know a lot of you saw that game winner he hit over Paul George. He is averaging over 29 points per game. And you look at the standings, they have a chance to make the playoffs. I mean, it's crazy. They are on a roll. And this is a huge game for Phoenix. So this is going to be a fun one. What a Monday matinee. Let's go. Sign me up.
A couple of things. Did you see the video that someone put out of all of the game winners that have been hit over Paul George?
Yeah, he's had a few. I suppose that comes with the territory, though, of being like the go-to defender, right?
It does, but it was still funny.
But it's still hilarious. Yes, correct.
It's still hilarious. But that's what you're going to get whenever you're on the guy that's going to shoot the game winner. It's always going to be on you. But, yeah, that was pretty funny. But, yeah, dude, I mean, you know, the NBA, whenever you've got a player or a team that's incredibly hot and is shooting at an incredible clip, then anyone can win any game. And you take out the fans, you change the atmosphere a little bit, and all of a sudden things maybe aren't as one-sided as they've seemed before, because Phoenix has had a horrible home environment. But I don't know, man. Whenever the confidence is high, whenever you've got a player that's as good as Booker, that can be dangerous. And, you know, I just hope it's not the Thunder of the past. Well, I guess Booker's a big name. We usually give up, like, massive games to guys. It's like their career high. It's a guard that we've never heard of before.
Right.
So that means that maybe we'll shut Booker down.
I hope. I assume that, and we'll see if Robertson plays, but I assume that Dort, and we saw Terrence Ferguson back.
They throw a bunch of different guys at it.
They got a bunch of bodies they can throw at them. Guys that are athletic and have length, and then you have Dort with his strength. So hopefully they can make life miserable Monday afternoon for Devin Booker. But we'll see. Now, Teddy, the finalists for all the NBA awards came out. MVP finalists are Giannis, Harden, and LeBron. The finalists for most improved player are Bam Adebayo, Luka Doncic, and Brandon Ingram. Rookie of the Year finalists, Ja Morant, Kendrick Nunn, and Zion. Finalists for Defensive Player of the Year, Giannis, Rudy Gobert, and Anthony Davis. And then the ones that we really care about, because they've got Thunder people on them, the finalists for Sixth Man of the Year are Montrezl Harrell, Dennis Schroeder, and Lou Williams. And the finalists for Coach of the Year are Mike Budenholzer, Nick Nurse, and the Thunder's own Billy Donovan. So I don't think – now maybe Billy Donovan can win Coach of the Year. Yeah. Maybe he can. And I know he already won that, or was co-Coach of the Year, right, when the coaches voted on it. I don't think that he is going to win this one. I think Nurse. Nick Nurse has done the best coaching job of anybody in basketball this season. I think he's the best coach in all of basketball with what he's been able to do in Toronto after losing Kawhi. But Schroeder, I think he should win Sixth Man of the Year, because I've seen it in person how important his offensive production is for the Thunder's success against good teams But I think that Montrezl Harrell is going to win it, and it's because the attitude Montrezl Harrell brings to the Clippers. He's kind of the guy that sets the tone for them, because Paul George and Kawhi, they're kind of quiet guys, right? Montrezl Harrell most certainly is not. He's kind of the attitude guy for that team, and kind of when they are maybe not playing at their highest level, he's usually the one that picks that team up and gets them going. So he's also got great numbers. He's good on both ends of the floor, good rebounder, whole thing. But maybe him and Lou Williams, two teammates are finalists for sixth man of the year.
Should be impossible.
How does that even happen?
You cannot have two sixth men on the same team. That is impossible. You can only have one.
Well, then, but
the other guy is the seventh man on that team.
Did we just start a controversy for sixth man of the year?
Excuse me, there can only be one.
Adam Silver, question in the back. How can they have two sixth men? Doesn't one of them have to be the seventh?
I don't know a lot, but I know that is impossible. So, sorry, pick one.
Once again, math, maybe not our strong suit, but I feel like we just made a damn good point.
I don't know, man. I'm with you on Harrell. I think he probably wins it, but I mean, I gotta feel like you hate that you think these things matter, but I feel like the eyeballs matter, and I think the Thunder can have a tendency to maybe be overlooked in some of these categories if it's not like an MVP type of season or something, as we saw with Westbrook and Kevin Durant. But
yeah, hey, it's not like they played a bunch of national games this year.
Morant, you think he's rookie of the year?
Yeah, I do. I don't think 100%. Zion played enough games. I don't think.
What are they doing with him right now?
Are they load managing him when they've got like four games left? Like what? I get it. I don't think he's in that great of shape. I understand.
It's bad.
He does not look good.
I saw a.
Play him at all then?
Exactly.
Just
I feel like I got catfished with the picture they released of him from. It looks really good coming out of quarantine. I was like, okay, let's go. Zion's been.
He's looking lean, bro. He's looking lean.
He looks terrible.
He does not look good.
Laboring up and down the floor, but I don't know. That's been pretty disappointing.
Yeah, they should just shut him down, and that way, like, we don't have hope. We all don't have hope of getting to watch him play. But yeah, that was weird. It was like they're gonna rest him. It's a back to back. You're like, really? I mean, he's been resting for months.
The other point is, like, if you're only going to play him 15 minutes, if you want to win games, why don't you play him in the most important 15 minutes of the game? It's like, oh, we burned out all his minutes in the first two quarters.
Why not save 5 minutes to play him the last 5 minutes of the game? Guys, what are we doing? Alvin, do you want to get fired? I do. I got a lot of questions.
I know he wants to play him. I mean, that's one of those things that's over his head, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's move on to our winners and losers of the weekend. Winners and losers brought to you by Advanced Weight Loss Clinic of Sand Springs. They'll help you execute a realistic and achievable weight loss plan designed for you and only you. They've got all kinds of treatments for men and women. Their licensed and trained experts combine diet and exercise with hormone therapies to maximize your results. If you're struggling with low libido or low energy, Advanced Weight Loss Clinic of Sand Springs can help with that too. They also offer Botox and fillers. To get on the path to losing weight, call 918-241-LOSE or visit their Facebook page. If you mention the podcast, you will get a free fat burner injection. All right, Ted, who do you have as your winner of the weekend?
I'm going with Morikawa winning the PGA, and I'll tell you, Too often do we see a tournament where a guy's got a lead and plays it safe to find his way into the championship on the back nine. And I like whenever I see someone just reach out and grab it. And on the 16th, 295-yard par four, he grabs the driver. Instead, you know, you've got a group of guys right there at 11 under, a couple of guys at 11, a group at 10. Instead of putting something out there safe, you know, taking an iron in to have a shot at birdie. He brings out the big stick, takes driver right at the pin, and ends up burying about a seven and a half foot eagle putt to go to 13 under. And he wasn't done. He grabs a driver on 18, and it's a dangerous drive, and he just, you know, lets it rip, takes a dangerous line into the pin on 18. I mean, he was aggressive, and sometimes that happens, Gabe, whenever you're 23 years old, wins his first PGA championship. L.A. kid, California kid, went to Cal. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I was watching every second of it. You know, that was there was such a log jam at the top of that leaderboard. I was like, I literally Googled how many people can be in a major playoff. I was like, is there a limit? Like, or does everyone go to, like, do they flip a coin and get down to like a couple guys? I was just like if there's seven guys at 10 under, and how about Matthew Wolf? Yeah. Talk about playing well, his first major, right? Jeez, that kid's going to be a star. But
what, yeah, he posted the first, what did he post 10 under, and he was the first
one he was in at 10.
And that was, at that time, was tied for the lead, right?
Yeah.
So pretty impressive from him.
Yeah, hell of a showing, but yeah. Morikawa, I think he's going to have a pretty productive career in golf. Just a guess. I'm just throwing out a wild guess. Who do you have?
He's going to be great. It's going to – I mean, 23 – we've seen a lot of this though. I mean, we saw Spieth go on an epic run for 1 year. We saw – I mean, McIlroy went on a great run like in 12 and 13. It's like, oh, is he going to catch Tiger? Well, he hadn't hardly won anything since. So, hopefully he puts together a good long career.
Doesn't play him out. Scotty Scheffler kid, mm-hmm. who is also a Longhorn, what, 24? He was – Yep. It's put together a pretty good field, man.
There's a bunch of good golfers out there, and it feels like most of them are from Oklahoma State. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're pretty good at golf in Stillwater.
They are. My loser is, I know that maybe this isn't even going to happen, but I had it down before. My loser is Arkansas. You know, we talked about some of the scheduling changes, and you know, what the SEC did, which is, you know, good for Alabama and Georgia, but it sucks for the other teams. They're trying to set up their best teams to win the playoff. So
That is quite the accusation, sir.
Okay, well, Arkansas.
Yeah, obviously, that's exactly what they're doing.
If you've got an opportunity, you're playing Arkansas. Arkansas' schedule is insane. They play Alabama, LSU, Auburn, and since the SEC is so nice in their crossover games, they went ahead and gave them Georgia and Florida, two top 10 teams. So they play five teams in the top 11 in the coaches poll. So I feel bad for old Pittman taking over that job, but I can hear the team meeting now. You know what this is, boys? This is opportunity, right? This
no
is opportunity
one believes right in here. Us. Hey, it doesn't matter if they believe in us. All that matters is the men in this room, that we believe in each other. That's all that matters. We don't need anybody else, men. Like, that's what he has to say. What is he going to walk in and say, guys, we're going to get our asses beat all year long. It's not going to be fun, but hopefully we're going to grow from it. Like, what does that team meeting sound like?
That's so funny because, I mean, I've heard the speech that you just gave pretty much every time, starting at about my sophomore year in high school through the final year of playing football. And it doesn't matter if you're the number one team in the country.
Yeah, Saban gets that speech every year, I bet.
Nobody believes in you. Nobody except for the guys in this room. It's the same thing every time.
You got to find the angle to motivate the men. You got to find the angle. All right, Ted, my winner of the weekend, NBA beef. Yes, we've been hoping for it. We even floated out the idea of an octagon to the side of the court there in the bubble. But Damian Lillard uncharacteristically misses two free throws in clutch time against the Clippers. It loses them the game. And Portland clearly still fighting to get in the playoffs. It was shocking. I couldn't believe that he missed both of them. I really couldn't. This is a guy that is a career 89% free throw shooter. So I was stunned when it happened. And then Patrick Beverley is on the sideline, not even playing in the damn game, just yelling dollar time and laughing his ass off, just acting a fool after Damian Lillard missed him. And Damian Lillard addressed it after the game, saying he sent Patrick Beverley home before. He sent Paul George home in the playoffs last year. Said, if anything, them acting that way and being so surprised he missed was just a sign of respect. I mean, it was awesome. He was just laying into those guys. Paul George commented on an Instagram post that Dame is going to get sent home this year. Lillard responded, telling him to keep switching teams, that he was scared of the grind, called him chumps. It was awesome, running from the grind, he said. And then Dame Lillard's sister and Paul George's girl got into it on Instagram. I think she called her like a – I think Dame's sister called her a whore. She called her a cow. It was like – it was all over the place. The NBA beef is alive. This is what we've been asking for, Teddy. This is what we've been hoping for.
And here's what's going to happen. Those guys are going to pass each other in the hallway. I mean, usually after a game like this in the typical NBA, everyone flies to their separate cities, right?
Yes.
But this is what we've been talking about. They're stuck in the dorm rooms together, and they're going to cross paths. It's going to happen. And I'm looking for fireworks, okay? I'm looking for fireworks. There's another thing, too, though. I mean, that's one of the different factors about the environment that they're playing in. You can hear the other team. You can hear people, like, you're used to going on the road and shooting your foul shots with a roar, right?
Right. And normally in a situation like that, like, you miss two free throws like that, if you're Dame Lillard, the crowd would be going crazy. You wouldn't be able to hear those guys, right? And he could hear everything. Like, they were laughing, just clowning him, and he could hear it all.
I mean, that sticks with you. That sticks with you more than a crowd just going wild and it being loud. I mean, there's a little bit of comfort in the noise. You know, you can hide behind that a little bit. But when you hear your competitors laughing and you could pick out each individual voice, that'll stick with you. So, I mean, I think that's something that we haven't really talked about enough is – and as it gets more heated and there's more and more on the line, I think that's going to stick out a little bit more, the jawing back and forth between timeouts and stuff.
I hope that there's some straight-up fist fights.
There will be.
There's going to be. When the playoff intensity – and I know the atmosphere –
you play the same guys like game in, game out.
Yeah, you go 6-7-game series. Yeah, these guys are going to fight. It is going to be so awesome. Now, my loser of the weekend – Brooks Koepka. Now, I did not feel good because, remember, my prediction was that Brooks was not going to finish at the top of the leaderboard. I did not feel good about that prediction going into Sunday because it looks like he was in position to win a third straight PGA championship, and he felt good about it. He did because he came out and said some things on Saturday, and I want to make it clear. I think stuff like this is good for golf. Because it causes some controversy. It gets them some more headlines. It gets more people talking about golf. But he was asked about the leaderboard heading into Sunday, and he said that DJ's only won one, and he didn't know the other guys on the leaderboard. It was hilarious, and I think it kind of got blown out of proportion, but this is kind of just the guy Koepka is, and I kind of like the way is we've seen him kind of clown DeChambeau. Like, it's like, this is just how he is, right? He is not afraid to speak his mind. But Teddy, he did not play well on Sunday.
See, that's the crazy thing. Usually he talks like that and then goes out and just plugs right along.
Yeah, shoots 65 and wins by a couple of shots. Yeah, but
no big deal. But I think, you know, I actually like it, and you know, golf is a different sport than everything else. It's 90%
yeah,
mental.
It's impossible.
90% mental, and the other half is physical. And you just, whenever you can play something.
Wait, 90% mental and the other half is physical?
I was hoping you'd catch that.
The 140% of golf? I know math isn't our strong suit, but what the hell? Now, can you at least make a better number? 140%? What?
That's a Yogi Berra line that he used to always use. It's 90% mental and the other half is physical. I was hoping you'd catch it. I was worried you weren't. It took you a second. You're like, hang on.
I was doing some mental math. I was like, 90, other half. What?
But, I mean, anytime you can wedge something into someone's brain in golf to where they're thinking about you other than whatever it is that they're supposed to be thinking of their swing mechanics or the little thing they've been working on as they've been putting. You start messing with people's mind in golf and they can fall apart. The problem is he was the one that fell apart. So I like what he's doing. From an outside observer, I think it's fantastic. For the golfers, you know, the country club kids, I'm sure that they're supposed to treat each other with great respect and everything. But mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm all about Koepka's shit talking. Like, I love it.
You just
got to
back it up, though, right?
Yeah, you can't go out there on a Sunday in a major when you're in one of the last groups and shoot 74 and finish tied for 29th. Like,
if they call,
especially
Koepka
in that
right
shirt,
now,
that shirt deserved more than that. That
a little
thing was
loud.
Vibrant. A little vibrant. Loud.
If you called Koepka right now on his private jet back to wherever it is that he lives and said, what'd you think about who won the PGA? He would claim that, oh, I don't even know. I left whenever I was done playing. I just bounced. Who won? I didn't even see it. I guarantee that's what he would say.
There's no doubt. And I did like, did you see Rory McIlroy chimed in? Because Rory's one of those guys, he's all about respecting the other guys, right? That's kind of his thing. But he said, quote, sort of hard to knock a guy with 21 PGA Tour wins, which is three times what Brooks has. So, which he was talking about Dustin Johnson, of course. And Dustin Johnson ends up finishing, what, I think tied for second with Paul Casey. So, I love golf smack talk.
I don't know if it's just like shit talking sounds so much better from an Irishman.
Oh,
right?
It's so much better. It's so much better.
It just burns so much better. And we see it with McGregor all the time. He's one of the best to ever do it. And so whenever you hear Rory throw it out there, it just sounds tough. It sounds perfect.
Okay.
It sounds like he's had 8 pints and he's ready to fight.
Who would you rather want to see fight? Patrick Beverley and Damian Lillard or Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka? I'm going Beverly and Lillard. I think that would be fun to watch.
That would be – so that would be fun to watch. McIlroy and Koepka would be funny to watch. I mean,
Koepka's a big dude. That's a big guy.
I mean, come on. He's a big dude.
But then again, Rory, he's Irish. You never know. Hey.
That's true.
Maybe he's been some scraps in his day. You never know.
That's true, but you just feel like – golfers have been a little bit pampered. Let's be honest. A lot of these kids are rich kids growing up that probably – I would say that you can count on one hand the fights that entire PGA leaderboard has ever been in their whole life. And it's probably not the same with Lillard and Beverly. Oh, I know it's not the same with true Beverly.
Oh, yeah, especially – hey, Lillard from Oakland, like he's one of those guys where he's talked back to me like during a game, and I'm like, yeah, that guy wants to kill me. Like he wants to fight me for sure.
And he's crazy enough to punch you right there in the game and take the fine and take the suspension, eat it, and I'll play next year.
That would be awesome. All right, Ted, let's move on. Or one more thing about the PGA. You mentioned people fighting. How many golf purists do you think want to fight the Van Ruin guy? Wearing the joggers and like the tie-dye hoodie out on the course. The stones on that guy to rock that outfit. That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. I feel like, who was it that told Ricky Fowler to turn his hat around? Remember he was in the press conference and had his hat on backwards and someone was like, hey, turn your hat around.
Okay. Can you imagine what those guys, the golf purists that like, look at this kid disrespecting the game with that outfit.
I didn't even see it. I'll have to go back and look, but I can only imagine that Faldo up in the box was letting him have it.
His Sunday fit was, I'm not kidding. He was wearing joggers, which I guess there some brand must make a jogger golf pant. And he was wearing a like tie dye and it had a hood. I was like,
I saw long sleeved.
He looked so comfortable. I was like, that's exactly what I wear every day at my house. Like Lululemon, like a hoodie and sweats. Like that's what I wear when it's 60 degrees outside, which of course it was 60 degrees in San Francisco because it's the most overrated city on the planet.
I'm shocked he didn't have some slides on. He wasn't kicking his slides off every time he hit a shot and just strolling down the fairway.
That was awesome. I was like, look at this guy. This guy is living right, playing pro golf and comfortable as hell while he's doing it. All right, let's move on to keeping it local, where normally we highlight what's going on in the great state of Oklahoma. And keeping it local is brought to you by Bishop McGinnis Catholic High School. As schools look to reopen in the fall, parents want to provide the best possible educational experience and spiritual development for their children. There's no better place for that than Bishop McGinnis Catholic High School. A one-to-one iPad setting makes McGinnis students fully prepared to continue high-level learning from home. A 12-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio guarantees no student is overlooked. In addition to athletic programs and clubs, Bishop McGinnis's college prep curriculum offers 22 AP courses. Financial aid is available. For more information, visit bmchs.org. And despite the fact that I apparently no longer can read, McGinnis is a great school. So, yeah. Gosh, how many times? There's like 18 errors in that. So sorry to my people at McGinnis. All right, Ted. Now, normally we pick a story for keeping it local. I thought we'd do something a little different. And we're just going to take a couple of Twitter questions from the listeners. So the first one comes from Bobby McKay at Sooners 1866 on Twitter, says, if college football has moved to spring 2021, do you think a whole season can be played or will it be shortened?
I think it'll be shortened.
Agreed.
Can a whole season be played? Absolutely, a whole season can be played. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be shortened. I think it's probably going to end up being about what we saw, like a conference schedule plus one. Maybe you see the Big 12 do conference plus two to get to 11 games like everyone else. But I imagine it's probably going to be an 11-game season. Maybe 12. I mean, at that point, maybe you can get an extra one in.
I've been thinking ever since kind of the rumors that things were going to get canceled for the fall. I've been thinking a lot about the timetable for the spring season because I do think you're asking a lot of the kids to play a spring season and then jump back into a fall season. So they're going to have to modify the spring season and they may have to modify the fall season as well to kind of feel good about the kids from a physical health standpoint, and we're not even factoring in the virus, which will still very much be prevalent in the spring, and who knows, maybe even in the fall, we'll see. But I do think that if you could start somewhere in like February, something like that, maybe
they need to start the
right after the Super Bowl.
College football needs to happen the week after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that would be the ideal timetable, and then you just play a conference only spring schedule, and in my opinion, no bowl games, but you do play the college football playoff, you crown a champion hopefully, and then you try to make the fall schedule as normal as possible. I don't know if that's realistic, but I think that's how they'll try to do it. I think they'll try to shorten the spring season and then hopefully kind of get back to what we view as normal in the fall? Or do you think they both could be shortened, Ted?
I think the fall will be normal.
Okay.
I don't think it's a long year for sure, but I mean, there's guys that used to play in NFL Europe and then come straight over into the NFL and go to training camp and then play a full season. I mean, that in the NFL season is so much more brutally long than college. It's not even funny. So it's not optimal, but it can happen. The way I would do it, if I were in charge, I would have a uniform. I know there's nothing uniform about college football, but I would say we're playing 11 game season. Big 12, you'll play two games or two non-cons. Everyone else play one. We're going to play 11 games. Everyone gets one bye week. We'll schedule one bye week in there and let's knock this thing out. Now, I did read an article last week that whoever is in charge of the bowl, you know, committee said that they would play bowl games in the spring if that's what college football wanted to do. They said, as long as we've got sponsors willing to sponsor it and college football teams willing to play, we'll have the bowl games whenever they want them. So I don't know what college football will say about that, but it needs to happen quick. You know, typically we do the we do the season, we do the conference.
So that's a great point. It does need to happen quick. I want to make it clear that, listen, if they're going to cancel the fall season, right, I would like for them to have a plan ready to go, and not just for fans, everybody, just for the players. Because if you cancel the season on these players, first of all, you got to justify why you're doing it, and you're clearly going to frame that as, hey, this is what is best for your health and well-being. But then they need to have a relatively clear plan of moving forward in the spring. I don't think they can just cancel it and then say, all right, guys, hold tight, we'll get you a plan as soon as we can. It's like, the way I see it is like, it's when you're maybe switching jobs. You want to have something lined up before you quit. You know what I mean?
You want me, I'll tell you, like, if I was in charge, here's exactly what I would do. Okay. I would play an 11 game season. I may even, if I needed to, I would maybe even get rid of a non-conference game and just go 10 and the Big 12 plays 9. And then I would, in order to get rid of the, because what we'd have to do in the spring now, we'd have to have the end of the conference. Then you'd have to have a week of conference championship games. And then you'd have to start, you know, go into your selection or whatever. I would do this. I would say for this one year, we're going to have a 12-team playoff. We're going to start right into the playoffs. The first round of the playoffs is the conference championship games of the five Power Five conferences. And then we'll also have two group of five. If you want to seed it through all of those teams, you do it that way. But, I mean, I would turn it into a bigger playoff personally just to get it going faster.
Why not? I mean, if that there's a year to happen, do it, why not? It'll never happen. But, hell, these schools may be trying to make up as much revenue as they can. They may be willing to do a lot right now. So maybe this is how we get college football playoff expansion. This could be it. All right, next question
comes. They
would
definitely make some revenue. The revenue would be made up.
Oh, for sure. The next question comes from @JabinForReal on Twitter. It says, how will you spend your time if we don't have a college football season? Which is a good question that I've been thinking about a lot in the last 24 hours. I'm going on vacation, and that's what I'm going to do. I think, and now it's probably going to have to be, you know, within the United States, but I've got some of my favorite places. Teddy, I think you and the wife may hop on a few of these trips too. Like, we're going to make the most of this time. It's not like we're going to sulk, right? We got to make the most of it.
Jump in an RV and drive across the country or something. No, I mean, it is going to be a weird fall, because I'll tell you what, man. And I was laughing about this the other day, because even if we were playing this fall, this is going to be the only time in my entire life since, like, I don't know, junior high, that I haven't been playing football on Labor Day weekend. So this would be the first time in almost my whole life that the Labor Day holiday would be a holiday that I actually partake in. So that's going to be something totally new, totally foreign. I'm a lake guy. I was at the lake every weekend my whole life growing up, but I've never been to the lake on Labor Day. It's one of the biggest lake weekends out there, and I've never been. So
I've already,
that may be something right there that I'm doing.
I've already signed up to go with someone to Grand Lake for Labor Day weekend. I was like, wait, I get to do something on Labor Day weekend. Let's roll. Yeah. Going with my wife's aunt and uncle. Shout out to Frank and Belia. It's going to be a great trip. It's going to be a great trip. They got a great setup at Grand. So, yeah, already checked that one. And I think once we get done recording here, Ted, me and my wife, we are going to have a very real conversation of how many trips we want to take. So we'll see. Now,
we're open until Thanksgiving.
Yeah. The last question comes from Richard Stokes at Richin71 on Twitter. And he must watch the YouTube video of this podcast. He must watch, which go check it out. And now I'm doing the YouTube videos. We lost our awesome video guy because he's a teacher and, well, school is starting. So he's like,
so
you know,
if you see a major fall off in quality, we know where to go.
It's not where it was, but I'm trying my best, people. I'm trying my best. But Richard Stokes says, I would still like to know what Teddy Lehman is doing on the notepad during the podcast. Look at that. It's just chicken scratch.
It's chicken scratch. Here's my winner and loser. Here's Arkansas schedule for my loser. This is just some things I was jotting down as I was talking, the two conferences. For some reason, I wrote down science and medical expert that we talked about.
We did
Kevin
talk about
Warren
that.
Randomly written down here. That's the Big Ten commissioner. Why that's written down in the middle of the page, I have no idea. So just some random stuff.
Why is there a big red X through Kevin Warren's name? That's weird.
Bullseye.
Gosh, I can't blame the guy. He just wants to protect the kids. This whole thing sucks. Oh, well.
Well, as Trevor Lawrence says, he's not protecting the kids by sending them off into the wild.
Yeah. We know that it's a little more intricate than that.
That's true.
But all right. Well, episode 32 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop Thursday morning, which could be very interesting.
Talking NASCAR.
Which could be very interesting. You may hear Teddy and I talking, both of each other, talking one another off the ledge in that episode. But just a reminder, you can hear Teddy from 2 to 6 on Sports Talk 1400. You can hear me on Sirius XM Big 12 Radio, Channel 375. Hope you all have a great week. Guys, we'll get through this. We'll get through it together. We can lean on each other. It's okay. It sucks, but it's okay. We'll get through it. Until next time. We appreciate y'all for listening, and do what you always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.
Just one more time.